This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, a new vision of aging. Support CARP with your membership today. Visit carp.ca.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Zoomer Week in Review, all things Zoomer worldwide. I'm Libby Znaimer. Lessons from the disaster in long-term care by the numbers. A new report points the way to preparing for the second wave of COVID-19. And what makes the perfect kitchen? Architect John Oda has a timely look at iconic kitchens around the world now that the pandemic has us all spending more time there. But first, here are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. Should we reduce the 2-meter physical distance rule to 1 meter? Some countries, including the UK, are doing just that. But a new poll shows that 2/3 of Canadians favor keeping the 2 meters measure as we start reopening the economy. The Léger and the Association for Canadian Studies survey also found that if such measures were relaxed, a strong majority would not be comfortable taking part in activities like going to a movie or a restaurant. What's old is new again. The U.S. used clothing market is valued at $28 billion. And despite the COVID-19 pandemic, analysts think it will grow to $64 billion within 5 years. An estimated 64 million people bought secondhand clothing last year, and the co-founder and CEO of used clothing marketplace ThredUp says demand is still soaring. And the pandemic has prompted people to clean out their closets and drawers and sell anything that they don't want.
Happy, very happy to be home. Oh, I wouldn't mind a glass of wine, That would be nice.
That's 103-year-old Rose Weinstock, who says she's happy to be home and is looking forward to a glass of wine. The Thornhill, Ontario centenarian survived COVID-19 and spent her time recovering by reading dozens of books. Hospital staff say almost 20 a day. Rose's father survived the Spanish flu in 1920. It killed 55,000 Canadians.
Well, I have to pace myself. I have one rather old artificial knee. They know when I've climbed too many stairs.
A 90-year-old Scottish grandmother has raised $750,000 for the UK's National Health Service and three other charities by climbing the equivalent of 731 meters in her home. Margaret Payne climbed the staircase over the past 73 days as a way to keep busy during the pandemic. She was inspired by military veteran Tom Moore, who completed 100 laps of his garden just before his 100th birthday to raise millions for the NHS. I'll take the face mask for $200, Alex. 79-year-old Alex Trebek is not letting the pandemic or his cancer battle slow him down. Photos shared online show the beloved Jeopardy host and his wife at a Home Depot in California this week wearing customized hard hats and surgical masks. Alex is apparently into home renovations and still doing all the handiwork himself. The likable host also made news this week with his philanthropy. Just a few months after donating $100,000 to a homeless shelter in North Hollywood, he's written an even bigger check, $500,000, to help build another L.A. homeless shelter. I'm Libby Znaimer, and those are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. A new report confirms a shameful statistic. Canada's proportion of COVID-19 deaths in long-term care is double that in other Western countries. But Tracy Johnson of the Canadian Institute for Health Information says the numbers point the way to preparing for a second wave.
We wanted to see if there was a similar or dissimilar picture across the OECD countries. So, yes, we were a little surprised to see how high our long-term care deaths were.
Were you hoping that maybe your study went on a little bit longer than the other one, that maybe things were getting better?
Our purpose was to see if the experience was different, if we could see why it might be different. Some of the big things you can see, and one of the more interesting findings, is that when you look at the countries that put in stay-at-home orders, as well as shutting down their economy with economic stimulus, if they put in specific infection precaution measures in long-term care at the same time, they have had less deaths and less infections. So things like broad testing, training and auditing, rapid response teams, more staff.
Here in Canada, it took quite a while before long-term care workers were prohibited from working in more than one home. Was that a big factor?
It could very well have been a factor. We know that we have less nurses and less personal support workers per 100 seniors in Canadian long-term care than they do in the OECD countries. So that may very well have played a factor in this.
What about the fact that in many of these facilities, they still have four people to a room?
That is also, so that's one of the specific mandated measures that a number of OECD countries put in, and that we saw some things happen like that in pockets across the country. So being able to isolate those who are infected from those who aren't is important. And that was one of the measures that we see that other countries were able to institute sooner. We've been instituting some of these since the pandemic hit long-term care homes. We've been instituting some of these specific infection control measures.
Is there anything else that you think is key as we're headed towards the fall when we may have another wave?
This is a start in lessons learned. This is a start in a look at some of the things that we need to do. And one of the things that we can see in the report is that when standards are, when there's more central control of standards, it would appear that those homes also had less deaths. So there may be something in the discussion that's going on right now about ensuring that we have long-term care national standards.
Is there anything that we should learn from the countries that did really well?
The countries that did really well, what we heard was that at the same time as instituting their distancing measures, they were also fairly targeted in their long-term care homes with respect to broad testing and infection control and limiting staff movement from one institution to another, and they brought in rapid response teams. We've done a lot of that since the pandemic started here in Canada and since the focus on long-term care and the deaths we've seen in long-term care. Wave two will tell whether we've done a good enough job to continue to protect those who are in long-term care.
The premier was asked about this study, and he seemed to be downplaying it, saying, how can you compare us with our, 1,800 or so deaths to countries that had many, many more deaths by using the percentage, that it's not as bad as all that?
What it shows is that when we look at deaths in long-term care compared to deaths in the community, most of the deaths in Canada were in long-term care. I think that any information we as a country can garner internationally that helps to point us in the right direction around future pandemics and preparedness for it are a good thing.
Given what we have already done, is it enough to greet the second wave, in your opinion?
I don't think we know, Libby. I don't think we know.
Tracy Johnson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Libby.
That was Tracy Johnson of CIHI. I'm Libby Znaimer, and this is the Zoomer Week in Review. The pandemic has us spending much more time in the kitchen, which is now the center of most homes. It wasn't always like that. Author and architect John Oda toured and cooked in some of the most iconic historical kitchens in search of the perfect one. I talked to him about his book, simply called The Kitchen.
My wife and I love to cook and entertain, but we're in a house right now where the kitchen just isn't working for us. It's a little cramped. It's a little awkward. Things are not in the right place, and you could even say that Fran hates our kitchen. So we want to renovate, But I'm obsessive. So before I start to redesign, I need to know everything about the kitchen. So I went on a journey to find the perfect kitchen. I went all over North America to explore examples of excellent kitchen designs from throughout history so that I could learn from them, so I could incorporate those ideas into our kitchen. So I went to the kitchen of Thomas Jefferson and Georgia O'Keeffe and Julia Child and Louis Armstrong and Elvis Presley and many others. And I wanted to find the best aspects of all those designs so that I could put them in our kitchen. And then I cooked in those kitchens and I ate the food too, because I had to know if those kitchens really worked. So I had to eat the food.
Is there any common thread that you have found from kitchens through the ages? Because you started with the Pilgrim kitchen back in the 17th century.
Well, you know, the common theme was people loved to cook. These were all really great kitchens of their times. And what I found was from the Pilgrim kitchen right through to the Victorian kitchen, right through to Julia Child's kitchen, these were all people who loved to cook. So things were out on the counters, books were out, ingredients were out, and you could just tell there was a love of cooking in each of these kitchens. And what I found is that we just have it so lucky today. You know, everything's so convenient. We just have to open up a cellophane bag and put it in the microwave, and it comes out with perfect beans. In these historical kitchens, people had to work very hard to do their cooking. It was a hard job from sunrise right to sundown. And when they cooked, what they were doing was they were putting love into their food. They were putting love into their cooking because they wanted to please the people that they were cooking for. And that was a theme all the way through. And I find sometimes that we've lost a little bit of that love, that we lead our lives that are so go, go, go. And one of the things I'd like to do with this book is to try and inspire that love of cooking and putting love back into the food when you're cooking and spreading that love around to the people you're cooking for.
You visited Julia Child's kitchen.
Yes, I did. It was really a great influence in the way that I see design. When I got there, I was completely shocked. Things were out on the counters. It was very messy looking. That's the first impression, is it's very messy looking. There's pots and pans all over the walls, and canisters of spoons and knives, and it's really quite messy. And when I saw it, I thought, oh my gosh, this looks just like my mother's kitchen. I couldn't believe it. But, you know, the longer I was there, I stayed there for 3 hours. I looked at every little detail. And what I realized is that the kitchen was actually very well organized. In one corner, she has canisters of spoons, and it's the baking area, and she's got the mixer there and measuring cups. Over by her stove, she has all her pots and pans hanging within easy reach. Another area where she makes salads, there all her vinegars and oils are out. So it's actually very well organized. And what it did was, I'm a minimalist. I'm a modernist. And I like nice, clean, austere surfaces. But what I learned from Julia's kitchen is that not everything has to be put away. Not everything has to look perfect. This is the kitchen of someone who loves to cook. And you can feel that love of cooking when you're at her kitchen.
What do you have to say about the journey from the kitchen, you know, being at the bottom of the stairs for the servants, to the kitchen now in many renovations? It's right in the center of the house, and there's kind of a family area built around it, almost that replaces a living room.
The kitchen is now, as you said, the center of the house. And when people come to to our houses now, you know, before you would take them into the oh-so-important living room, and they'd sit in couches, and they'd see the first edition books and the wonderful watercolors and things like that. Now people come right into the kitchen, and the kitchen's the center of the floor plan. That's where the cooking is. There's that pot of coffee on. That's where the kids do their homework. And it's a much more open, naturally lit place, and it's the place that we gather now. So it's a result of changes in gender roles. Now, it used to be it was just females who did the cooking in the kitchen. But after the 1970s, there was a sort of odd, more equalization of gender roles. So now men, women, children, guests all pitch in for the cooking. It's just a more holistic attitude about cooking and living and life in the house, so that the whole kitchen opens up to the rest of the house, so that even the materials that we use for the table, we used to sit at a dining room table in a separate room. That eating table quite often is sort of just natural wood, and that natural use of natural materials spreads out to the rest of the house, so that the same materials that are used in the kitchen are the same materials that are used on bookcases and furniture in other parts of the house. So it's really the hub of the house. And I think that in the future, the kitchen's always going to only become more important to the house.
I think the pandemic has re-elevated the kitchen.
Oh, my goodness. People are all cooking. And, God, when I look at my cell phone, look at Instagram, the masterpieces that are on display make me want to eat my phone. It's fantastic. So, yes, I think that people are spending more time in the kitchen through all this. We have more time. So it's people are cooking for other people. And it's actually a lot of fun to see what people are cooking and showing off. It's almost like an art gallery, a virtual art gallery on Instagram of what people are cooking. And the different ways that they're expressing themselves through their food is a lot of fun to see.
John Oda, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was John Oda, author of The Kitchen. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the Zoomer Week in Review. I'm Libby Znaimer. Thanks for joining me today, and be sure to come back next week to stay up to date with all things Zoomer worldwide.
Zoomer Week in Review is produced by Zeev Hadi, Christine Ross, and Paul Thomas. Technical producer, Justin Eacock. Executive producer, Moses Znaimer. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.